Senator Mike Lee is in the Uinta Basin today and has accepted our invitation to join us on air for an update on several items that are on the minds of constituents here in northeastern Utah, including the Trump administration's first 100 days, tariffs and the economy, his priorities as chair of the Natural Resources Committee, and how they will affect American energy and the economy here in the Uinta Basin. And if we have time, immigration and the SAVE Act. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM KVEL. Welcome to the Uinta Basin, Senator Lee.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you as always.
With Republican control of the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate, as well as the executive branch, what is your impression of the first 100 days of the Trump administration?
But there's been a lot of movement over the last 100 days, a lot of damage left by the previous administration that the current administration and Congress try to sort out. And so I've been very pleased so far with how the Trump administration is going. We've got a lot more to do to follow through on the promises of DOGE to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse in government. The DOGE investigative efforts have got to be followed up by spending reform efforts on the part of Congress, in addition to some regulatory and other reforms that we need to develop our nation's energy. But we're heading in the right direction, not always as fast as I would like, but making good progress.
Trump tariffs have had a volatile effect on the stock market, as well as introducing inflation, which is affecting our local industry, our retailers, and our local commerce here in the Uinta Basin. What would you say to someone who is concerned about not only the short-term effects, but the possible long-term effects of inflation in an already inflationary post-Biden economy?
Well, I would say, first of all, that you're right to be concerned. I'm concerned also. I think trade wars are dangerous. No one wins trade wars. They leave losers and winners. But interestingly enough, with a degree of irony almost, Trump could end up going down in history as the most pro-trade, pro-growth president, at least in modern memory, if he uses this moment as an opportunity to reduce trade barriers. And it would help ease inflation while promoting demand for U.S. products abroad. That would be good for Americans. It would be good for everyone. So I'd be supportive of a deal that increases market access for U.S. businesses in Europe and reduces European reliance on America's security umbrella. And just within the last few days, I've heard President Trump suggest that the administration is in the process, as he's told me recently that he is and that he would be, of negotiating multiple bilateral trade agreements with countries that have become subject to the new tariffs and to the threat of new tariffs. The potential upside here is something that really could benefit us for decades to come in a very real way. When you reduce tariffs and you reduce other non-tariff trade barriers, you're going to have more trade overall, and that's going to be good for the American economy. There will be no winners at all, however, if the tariff negotiations that are underway culminate in just more tariffs. So I think this is where the rubber meets the road, and this is where we will see the difference here. By using tariffs as a pressure point, Trump has achieved results that diplomats have been unable to achieve. And that's what negotiation is all about. It's the art of the deal that Donald Trump developed decades ago, applying leverage in a way that benefits American interests. So whether it ends for the good or for the for better or for worse really just depends on where he takes it. Where I hope and expect he'll take it is a successful path that will culminate in these bilateral trade agreements.
So your advice is to be patient and yeah, this will pass and benefit our economy in the long run?
Yeah, not only pass, but I think in order to the overwhelming benefit of the economy, if he goes with it, where I think he could and should go.
What would you say to those with retirement investments in the stock market that are seeing their investments shrinking? I mean, the stock market was pretty volatile this morning. There was another big hit. What is your comment on that?
Well, insofar as that relates to uncertainty created by tariff uncertainty, by the tariffs being both imposed and threatened, I suspect and hope, for the reasons we just discussed, that will be a temporary thing and that will pass, not only pass, but that it will rebound into something much better.
Okay. Many in the Uinta Basin celebrated your appointment as chair of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. What actions has your committee taken recently that will affect American industry, American energy, and also the economy here in the Uinta Basin that's dependent on energy?
Well, look, some of the things that we're working on, you know, all of them really relates back to a couple of guiding central principles. One of them is that no one knows the land like those who live on it or near it. Western communities have managed public lands with unmatched expertise for generations, and doing so while balancing multiple interests from ranching and grazing and energy development to recreation and conservation. We've achieved this despite hostile federal policies and intrusive federal regulations that distort the balance and threaten our way of life. So I'm committed to, settling this score and to rebalancing things so as to put the American people back in charge. The people who live and work on these lands, ranchers, energy workers, outdoor enthusiasts, loggers, and recreationists, they need to have a meaningful voice within our federal system and our federal regulatory environment. That means reversing previous administration's attempts to unilaterally block access to federal lands through, among other things like abuses of the Antiquities Act. And while we all agree that preserving our country's greatest landscapes is important, the Antiquities Act's original purpose, its original understanding, was never to lock up millions of acres all in one fell swoop with the stroke of a presidential pen. So as chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources, the permitting processes for responsible, timely energy development, ensuring resource management plans reflect local priorities and expertise, exploring opportunities for state and local management of certain public lands, and reforming the Antiquities Act to require congressional approval for large designations, while also modernizing the Endangered Species Act to serve both wildlife and communities in our economy at the same time.
As chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, do you have any insight as to the future of the Uinta Railway and when we might see a ruling from the Supreme Court on this matter?
Yeah, so the Uinta Basin Railway case was argued a few months ago, back in November, I believe, and it's still pending before the court. It's still, what they say, is under advisement. As a lifelong watcher of the Supreme Court, based on the cues that I picked up from the oral argument and from the briefing, I think this is the kind of case that is likely to be just 2 weeks, meaning sometime in April, May, or early June at the latest, we should have a decision in that case. And I'm guardedly optimistic that it will be a favorable one, and we'll finally be able to move ahead with that.
Okay. Senator Lee, you are a Senate sponsor of the SAVE Act. Could you just tell us what the SAVE Act is and why this is a priority of yours?
The SAVE Act is simple. It does something that 80 to, which is that non-citizens shouldn't be able to vote in U.S. elections. U.S. elections are for American citizens. Federal law, in fact, prohibits non-citizens from voting in U.S. elections. But there's a law passed by Congress in the early National Voter Registration Act, sometimes known as the Motor Voter Law. The Supreme Court, decades after that was passed, interpreted it in an absurd way. I think the Supreme Court it misinterpreted the statute, but interpreted it nonetheless to basically prohibit the states from requiring proof of citizenship when people fill out their driver's license form and check the box they want to register to vote. They're legally prohibited from asking whether or not someone is a citizen and whether they can prove that they are citizens. And so that has occurred at the same time we've been letting in tens of millions of undocumented immigrants. An estimated 28 million or so non-citizens now live in the United States. Many, some would say most of those, are here illegally. But in most states, you can get a driver's license pretty easily as a non-citizen. In many states, even if you're an illegal immigrant. And in every state that allows that, as long as you're applying for it, you can check the box and with one signature, without any documentary proof, you can become registered to vote for U.S. House, U.S. Senate, or presidential races. That shouldn't be the case. The SAVE Act would change that and would require people to produce some type of proof of citizenship when they register to vote in the U.S. election. Now, the left has undertaken a really hyperbolic and, frankly, dishonest response to the SAVE Act, complete with truth-free, patently absurd claims that it would somehow prevent women from voting and make it impossible for married women who had changed their name legally after they got married to prove their citizenship. It simply isn't true. Look, anytime any American starts a job, they have to fill out a form called the I-9. And when they fill out the I-9, they have to produce proof that they are U.S. citizens. And yet that has not stopped married American women, including American women who are married and who have changed their names after they got married, such that their legal name no longer matches the last name indicated on their birth certificate. Yet that hasn't stopped them. There's no reason why we should make it any more permissive when dealing with something as sacred and important to protect as the right to vote.
Social Security, DOGE has uncovered a lot of abuses with Social Security. Are illegal immigrants applying for and receiving Social Security benefits?
In many instances, yes, particularly during the Biden administration, as we made it far too easy for many of them to gain access to Social Security numbers. And they're not supposed to be able to participate in those programs, but once they have a number, it's very difficult to weed them out, get them out, and that's part of the problem.
With the legacy media, many are describing, or most are describing, that Abrego Garcia should be returned to the U.S., stating that his constitutional liberties have been violated. Does an illegal immigrant to the United States have constitutional liberties?
So before someone is deported, they typically have a chance to seek some type of relief. But that relief can be defined and curtailed by statute. Now, there is a disagreement right now among and between different federal courts and between the administration and the courts and various litigants as to the extent of the authority given to the president under the Alien Enemies Act. That's being ironed out in courts right now. But needless to say, the due process rights that are attached to being an alien in the United States, particularly an alien who is here unlawfully, are very different than what they would be for a lawful permanent resident or especially a U.S. citizen. So it's the nature and extent of what due process rights they may have that go beyond that. As far as Mr. Garcia goes, I find this a curious case for them to want to wage battle on a crazy hill to die on, especially given that Mr. Garcia, as far as everything we can tell, this guy was here illegally. He is associated with MS-13, a violent criminal enterprise from El Salvador that's essentially a sponsor of terrorism. And so what procedural rights he has at this point, while in dispute, are not going to matter at the end of the day, because this guy is the poster child for the kind of person who is deportable and should properly be deported.
All right. Senator Lee, I know you have a busy schedule today, and I want to thank you again for coming on the air with us and stating some things, that answering some questions that many of your constituents have here in northeastern Utah. Do you have any parting comments?
Look, I continue to believe that the Uinta Basin is the future of Utah in many, many respects as an energy player for obvious reasons and as an economic powerhouse. I believe we're on the cusp of some very big developments, particularly with the regulatory reform and the permitting reform we're working on in the Senate and in Washington generally. I think we're on the cusp of very good times for the Uinta Basin. I look forward seeing this live up to its energy production potential.
All right, Senator Mike Lee, it's been a pleasure having you on the air with us. As a reminder, Senator John Curtis will be in the basin the latter part of this week. We have a special call-in program with Senator Curtis Wednesday evening at 5:30, so we'll encourage you to listen in for that. Again, Senator Lee, thank you for joining us. This is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL.